Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion of the offense against the Cowboys in that big week three win. Much needed. Didn't do it without some high blood pressure involved in that fourth quarter and the three consecutive Cowboy touchdowns to come back into range. But they got the job done. And here to join us, of course, Gabe Ferguson again for part two. Gabe, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thanks for having me back. Looking forward to breaking down some of the O-line performances, the much maligned Ravens offensive line.
A good game for the offensive line. I mean, a lot of things went right for them in this game. Zero sacks allowed. They did allow one quarterback hit, and it's not a lot. It's only on 15 plays that resulted in a pass. So they didn't allow any sacks. One quarterback hit, 3.5 pressures. Another half pressure, by the way, that's to the offensive line. Another half pressure went to Justice Hill in this game. But they did have two holding penalties and an illegal use of hands. You made the point that the illegal use of hands, it was weird. It looked to me like his hand was up there, but I agree with you. I didn't really see the penalty. And it's something I'm sure the Ravens are asking for clarity from the league.
Yeah, I think when we talked a little bit in the first half about the penalties in general, obviously that's something that needs to be cleaned up. The holding penalties are kind of drive killers a lot of the time. Yep. It's not always the case. You know, they've been able to overcome some of them, but a 10-yard penalty, especially there's a little bit of just kind of like a gut punch when, especially when it's after a nice run or a nice play. That's the really brutal part about it. It's something I think is going to be a point of emphasis that they're going to really try to address. So, but overall, you know, compared to some of the issues we've seen, very, very good play.
As in the work, you know, in the work you do, I know that, you know, the concept of variance and whatnot is a big deal. And obviously in football, variance is value that accrues to the defense, variance of offensive result, because average offensive results, you drive right down the field and score every time. So you're, if the defense requires variance and it needs to build it and needs to seek it in various ways, but penalties are one of the big ways.
Yep.
And that's why they are such a very big win for the defense. And usually you try and win a matchup and get a penalty, but a lot of times it's self-inflicted, that offensive lineman, particularly on a run play, is making a block that doesn't need to be continued outside the frame because the run is already past him.
Yeah, and sometimes it's kind of just the luck of what a ref sees. But there are certain things that referees are looking for. I think as an offensive lineman at this point, you know where you can put your hands, where you can't put your hands. Be aware of what's going on around you, and if the play is going past you, just let go. You know, you don't need to keep holding them as the play is moving past. That can clean up, you know, a handful of penalties, and that can be game changing potentially.
Yeah, and you know, with the emphasis, and we talked extensively in part one about what the Ravens really need to clean up penalty wise. Some of the things that are going on the league. Just the officiating seems to be going dramatically against them, given their 32nd in the league in net penalty yards. They've had a number of calls and an illegal formation crusade on the first week against them that was like unlike any other game. It's really important that, by the way, Maureen, when I watch football with her, I love doing the offensive line scoring with her, but she used to, when we're at the stadium, she is the ultimate 12-man on the field nerd. She picks out those plays like right immediately. And part of it is she's looking at the secondary and she's writing them down and she's doing that part to support the project. And on TV, she's the same way. That's 12 men. Now she started with, that's illegal formation. That's illegal formation. We saw that in the Chiefs game. And I'm like, oh no, this is really bad. But there were plays and there was no difference in where Ronnie Stanley was lining up from the Chiefs game. They're just not calling.
It's really, really hard to understand what that was about. Maybe just because it was the first game of the year. But why was just Ronnie Stanley and not the other side of the ball? I mean, Juwan Taylor, I think it was shown by multiple people that he was lining up more offensively than what Stanley was doing, but he didn't get called at all. Why they chose to kind of, and it was the same drive. It was three penalties in the same drive, almost like back to back to back. It was kind of just like, we're just going to be complete, you know, assholes about it. And this specific drive to get our point across. I think honestly, that was part of it. They're like, we told you to fix it. You didn't fix it exactly how we wanted you to do it. So now we're going to penalize you again.
And the Ravens claim that's not what they were told. And in this case, there's no doubt about it. I believe the Ravens in terms of what they're saying. They're saying that was not what was communicated to us about how we had to line up. And obviously, you know, you call it that many times, you're messing up with the quality of the product in general. You don't want to have that. It's bad TV to have that many flags. It's you know, certainly bad for the sport to have that way. And it's just damn fortunate the Ravens scored on that drive anyway.
Yeah.
And that erased three of those illegal formation penalties. But it easily could not have worked out that way. You know, it could have easily been a stalled drive by one or more of those flags.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just goes, you know, I don't want to rehash everything we talked about in the first version, but it does seem like the Ravens have been unfairly targeted. And I guess we'll just leave it at that and see what happens in next week.
So I want to point you back to take a listen to that first episode. It's got that. It's got a lot of the Lamar Jackson overperforming his expectation, his opportunity set, which is, I think, interesting. A lot of it was yak, but it's still pretty interesting. A lot of the discussion about scheme and the snap division and the snap tendency breaking between Hill and Henry, that I think Gabe had some great points about. A lot of other things as well that make it a worthwhile episode, but please take a listen if you like. Move back to heavy personnel would be another thing I'd point to.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talked about some interesting things. I think we're going to be moving into the O-line now and kind of just see how has the Ravens O-line performance, you know, improved in this game in particular. You know, the first 2 weeks of the season, there was a lot of conversation, obviously, especially leading up to this game, all the talk about Daniel Faalele and whether or not he should remain in the starting lineup, whether or not they would do some sort of rotation. Roger Rosengarten as well, and whether or not he and Makari would continue to rotate or if that would be more solidified. Interestingly, it kind of went the other way, and we just had the same five pretty much the entire game, which is, I don't think, what anybody was expecting to see.
Right. Exactly. I would agree completely. I expected more Rosengarten. Looking back on this, if I had to guess what the thought process was, it was that they knew Micah Parsons would be on that right side. Makari has had a very tough run of it this year. So far, Chris Jones lined up against him on most of the snaps because they really wanted to take advantage of his length differences over there. And then they in the second week, he gets Max Crosby. And the third week, he gets Micah Parsons. There's nothing fair about that. And honestly, Makari has performed, I think, fairly well for the circumstances. Now, he got a failing grade. He got a D. This failing grade was a failing grade that was just out below the D range. So it's a high F. They got a D, and then he performed better this week. We'll get into that a little later, but a tough run of outside linebackers he's faced these first 3 weeks, or of pass rushers.
Yeah, I kind of wonder too if, you know, the thought process of going into this game was, we're going to have our starting five and we're going to see how they perform. And if there are performance issues, maybe we'll have someone come in and rotate. If we're getting run over, if we're not getting any push in the running game, if quarterback pressure is happening on every drop back. But fortunately, that wasn't the case. And we kind of got to see a fairly clean game from them overall, at least in terms of what expectation was and how they performed in the, especially the right side of the line over the previous 2 weeks.
Right.
I think, should we start with Ronnie Stanley? I think probably arguably the Ravens' most consistent offensive lineman this season, especially in terms of pass blocking. He's definitely turned a corner in terms of what we've seen this year as opposed to the past few. I like to think that's a good thing and that he's kind of back to where he was, at least as a pass protector. You did notice in this game that there were a number of missed blocks in the running game. So 11 missed blocks, that's quite a high number for, yes, for an offensive lineman. But on the other side, in pass protection, only one pressure. And he did have a few nice key blocks in this game. You want to kind of give a little bit more color as to what you were seeing there?
Sure. So this was the first game that was really unmarred by penalties for Stanley. So Stanley had a holding call in the second game, really phantom call. I think it's one the Ravens probably sent to the league. He had those three illegal formation penalties in the first game that are just annoying as hell, but they're also declinable, so they're very costly. So he's had games where his scores have really been impacted by the penalties that occurred. He only had one negative event in this game. He got beat by Parsons for a pressure in the second quarter, near the end of the second quarter, but he missed 11 blocks. And that's going to happen sometimes to a tackle in the run game, particularly when you run right, or sometimes also when you pull. So he did actually have three pulls where he was the trailer and picked up a courtesy point. So he didn't get charged with a missed block on those plays, because you don't always have one in that direction. The first guy almost always has somebody to block. The second guy doesn't necessarily, even if he runs his track properly, which he did. So a lot of the misses were just Stanley either moving up to level two and not finding a block. He did have some losses at the line of scrimmage. He had five losses at the line of scrimmage. So on those, somebody beat him on a pass play, but the ball was out quickly. Was most of those five. He also had some nice plays where he blocked two players behind the play, which is, that's something I really associate with Stanley, by the way, very good at making a block on one player on a play that's going to the opposite side, then picking up somebody else who's trying to cross the formation and picking up them too. He can do it on a pass play as well, particularly if it's a little screen or a rollout to that side, and be very effective doing that. But he's got a great sense of, I only need to put so much of a hit on that first guy, then I can worry about the second guy.
One of the plays that I seem to remember in this game in particular, which was the game, the play that sealed the game on the zone read keeper from Lamar on the jet sweep. I think Stanley had a nice level two block that kind of like was able to kick out a potential, you know, defender. I'm not sure if that was play that made into your notes or not, but I feel like he was kind of one of the lead players in opening up that running lane that Lamar was able to take.
I have him with a level one block on that play, but he was very quick to the pile. There were other guys. I mean, Falele had a big pull and a level two block on that play that was significant. But it's not like Stanley didn't have, I mean, three highlights for starters for a game for a tackle is unusually good. And so he picked up additional points for that. He ended up, the points per play are not that impressive at 0.76 because of the missed blocks. Got a reasonable adjustment for, you know, facing a good player. And DeMarcus Lawrence was his guy opposite him for a lot of this game. DeMarcus Lawrence, am I getting
yes?
Okay. For some reason, I thought he was getting his name mixed up with somebody else. But anyway, worked out to be a B after adjustment, made four of his six pulls. And again, three of those were courtesy points. That honestly was not a great pulling result, but also made five level two blocks. And you pointed this out. We're seeing a lot more mobility from Ronnie than we have any time since prior to the 2020 injury. So it's been 4 years since he's played this level of mobility. And it's something really to be appreciated. We may only have Ronnie Stanley for the rest of the season, but really try and take away who he is at left tackle and understand that the next left tackle we get is probably going to be limited in some way.
Yeah. And I know that we've had this conversation, and I'm sure you've had the conversation with other people as well about, you know, the future of Ronnie Stanley with the Ravens. And I think one of the things that was a qualifier for him staying on was having a kind of reemergence or a kind of a resetting of his play back to the expectation where he was kind of a Pro Bowl caliber player. Penalties aside, I think personally that we're seeing that from him again. So it really is going to put the Ravens in an interesting situation. I think if he can continue this level of play, he's not necessarily an old player. You know, we've seen tackles play well into their 30s in the NFL very effectively. If his body is kind of back to where it needs to be to play at a high level, I think there is potentially a way to kind of figure out a way, a contract that makes sense for both parties for a few years.
I think, you know, there part of it is what the market will be for Ronnie Stanley. Okay. And so he'll be what, 32 approximately when it comes due. And I don't have that right in front of me. It doesn't matter that much because the injury history is more important than the age in his case. I don't think there's a 3-year, $90 million deal out there for him. And that's, I can always be surprised by left tackle money that gets paid. We were surprised by guard money that got paid, including John Simpson this year. But I think that I don't see 3 years, $90 million for him the way that Orlando Brown got, say. I think he got maybe four for 120 even. But I think, you know, the more likely thing is that he has to pick between some mid-range offers that maybe actually have some different texture to them. And maybe there is a way the Ravens could put some incentive money in a contract for Ronnie that would make it be a place where he could retire. I think if Ronnie Stanley plays one more contract with the Ravens, he probably ends up in the Ravens Ring of Honor. And it's really the difference between, I don't think he has it right now. I think that, you know, the injury history on this contract, you know, as unfortunate as it was, you know, is probably going to keep him out. But if he were to play three more years, I think he's got it. In fact, I think he's got it pretty easily.
Yeah, I would tend to agree, especially if he plays at, you know, at the level that we're seeing from him now. So, he's been, I think, a real pleasant surprise. I don't think anybody knew exactly what we would see from him, especially after, you know, several injury riddled years. Hopefully, you know, he's able to stay healthy and able to continue to play this level, because I think he really is an important part of what this team is going to be on offense, of him being out there and playing at this level.
Right. All right. Let's see. 58 plays, 46 blocks. I think I already said it was 0.76 per play. B with adjustments. So good game from Ronnie. And honestly, so far, any deductions from him this season have really been all about the penalties. The mirror seems to be good again. Really happy with who he's been as a pass blocker and for the most part as a run blocker as well.
Yeah. I guess we can move on to Andrew Voorhees. You know, his left side of the line partner there. Not quite as good of a game. He also had a few missed blocks. You have him graded as 8 missed blocks, one shared pressure. You have him getting a couple penalties. We had an offensive holding. We had the hands to the face penalty that we talked about. Where do you see him in the overall scheme of this game and his progress in his third NFL start?
Right. Well, this is probably no real step forward overall for Voorhees. And I know there's been a whole lot made about what he did as a pass blocker in the game. Okay, folks, they threw the ball 15 times. They ran it 45, 43 if you take out the two kneels. It was really, whereas most times I deride anybody who really wants to put run blocking on the same as pass blocking level. This was a game where run blocking was really important. And he didn't have a great game. He had a solid pass blocking game, but he had two more times. He was flagged the illegal use of hands and the offensive hold. Maybe one of them was not a good penalty. The other one, probably was. And I don't really want to, fight individual penalties. You got to figure out how to not get them. And it often is just time of playing a game with the refs of where you are and knowing when to let go on a run play. His run blocking technique, I think, is pretty good, particularly when he doesn't have to pull. He's had some problems with pulling this year. But he's been generally pretty darn good in terms of run blocking technique. The problem has really been more about pass blocking. This game, he had very few pass blocking attempts. He was party to one pass rush event. He was pulled by Odigizua. I always want to get that correct, but I may not have said it correct. For a pressure that was shared with Falele. That was in the second quarter. He's also flagged for holding, had an illegal use of hands penalty, as we mentioned. The nice thing about the missed blocks, and you mentioned them earlier, the eight missed blocks, only two of those were losses at the line of scrimmage. So that's a nice thing. So not getting beat on a bunch of pass plays, not getting beat necessarily across his frame on a zone run play, which that can happen too on those. At seven blocks in level two, which is very good. You want to see a lot of that. Your guards had good opportunities to get to level two in this game and delivered two pancakes. Very good. Again, connected on 6 of 9 pulls, improved, still not where you'd like it to be. The Ravens had a time when Ben Grubbs and Marshall Yanda almost would never miss a pull. Ben Grubbs, in fact, if you wanted to pick the reason why you'd like him more than Yanda, it would have been for the pulls. He had one stretch where he went like 49-2 or something. I think he made 49 out of 51. Yanda, similarly, almost always was decisive enough to find somebody on a pull, would very rarely miss. Voorhees just has not developed that kind of decisiveness yet. So that's one unfortunate thing. He did have 4 highlight combination blocks. For people who don't know, combination block, you work on a double team at the line of scrimmage, generally speaking, with a player next to you. And then you leave that player behind once you know that player is either off his pins or taken by the player next to you. The player next to you, usually the center in his case, is going to give you a go code. It could be an actual word. Matt Scurro is on the show. He's describing some ways they do it. It could be a hip butt, like just literally knocking the player hip to hip that's next to you, which is basically go to level two. Or you could just say the word go, or I got it, or any of those things. So they're able to communicate on the field. They're not robots or people who can't hear each other. They're in actually very close proximity. And Voorhees did a good job of leaving that block behind, getting up to level two and making a second block. So he did that on 4 separate occasions. If you want specific notes, go to my offensive line article. It'll have all of those with the specific time references on that. But the penalties really cut down his score. If you want an idea, he had 8 points in penalties, which reduced him from 48 to 40 points. So he would have been like 48 out of 58 as a base score. But we'll do this. If I take 8 and or 58 divided by, I get an extra 14 points higher he would have been if he had not had the penalties. That doesn't mean he didn't have those penalties, by the way. And I don't want people increasing scores by the amount of the penalties because they think every penalty called on the Ravens is wrong. They're not. And it was a D with or without adjustment where he ended up after the penalties. So 0.69 per play. Improvement is needed. He's one of the players that Harbaugh is talking about when he says they need to reduce penalties. And you really can't afford to have penalties when your pass blocking is in question, because he's going to accumulate negative scores on pass blocking probably for the foreseeable future. Hopefully less and less on a per game basis. But the notion that he didn't allow any pressures in this game is kind of silly. I don't agree with it at all. He had a half a pressure, and that it's not even an insignificant number for only 15 snaps.
Getting back to the pulling topic, it is something the Ravens do quite a bit. They run a lot of different types of blocking schemes, but they do like to pull their guards. Do you think, this is an area where we could see improvement with experience? I mean, obviously,
yes.
Three games into his NFL career, there's certain ways that you probably read the game differently, that you see, you run the same plays over and over again, you get more comfortable in them. You see what defenses are doing around you. You see how linebackers are moving, how safeties are moving. And you kind of get an idea for how to, you know, use your body, use leverage, see, you know, where you need to connect. So there's, you think, room for improvement there for sure.
Absolutely. And it's one of the things, if I see a bad number in pulling, maybe to a lesser degree in connecting in level two blocks, in certain types of penalties, false start would be one, illegal formation would be another, where it's coachable to reduce those numbers. The Ravens had a long run about 5 years ago in 2018-19 when they had guys on the field getting their first couple of games, were picking up a lot of holding penalties. Like McCary replaced Skura after that injury in the Rams game, and he picked up two holding penalties in his first game, and they didn't have any for a long time, or he had a greatly reduced number over his next 30 games or so. So I think it's possible to reduce those. You have to get used to what the officials are counting. Yeah. Those are the big ways to improve. Reducing penalties is the big way to improve. If you can, if you can connect on more pulls, that'll generally help the offense in some meaningful ways, because some of the pulls he was missing, honestly, are a matter of getting beat, and it's getting beat by a player like Parsons, because he's pulling right to where Parsons typically is, and Parsons is just too damn quick to be caught. But those are the really challenging pulls, and so I think I would see improvement coming. I think Voorhees is a pretty good student of the game, from what I can tell, in terms of footwork and hand placement and some things like that, that will serve him well. The problem so far has just been length and maybe a little bit of quickness in terms of his ability to mirror and stop athletic pass rushers.
And I do think, you know, the fact that he's able to find work and connect at level two blocks is important, not just for, you know, kind of his ability to see what's going on around him and just his, you know, general field sense, but also how those plays are important in what the Ravens want to do. You know, connecting on those level two blocks is critical for taking, you know, a 4 or 5 yard gain and converting it into a 20 yard gain in the running game. Like, those are plays that spring these kind of big rushes that we've seen, especially, you know, Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, being able to take advantage of that, those types of downfield blocks. So hopefully, you know, that's an area where he can continue to build on the success he's seen so far.
Yeah, he had at one point in this game, he had four consecutive highlight blocks. And one of those combination blocks was actually the combination came on the front end of a screenplay. So he made his block at the line of scrimmage to pin somebody up, and then he moved into level, or slow him down, really was more the case. And then he moved into level two and was one of the three interior guys who made the block in level two. So a nice job on that. I might be even more encouraged by that. Like, if you move to screen blocking as something that he could potentially be good at, but I want to see a guy who just keeps his feet in level two, squares up with smaller steps as he gets towards a smaller player, and uses that ability to get effective hand usage without lunging. And it seems like every tight end and wide receiver on our team can do it. But the guards and the guards in particular who get out in space just have an incredibly difficult time getting it done.
Yeah. And that might just be the lack of experience at the guard position on the Ravens. So that's something that, you know, if they continue to build and gain experience from, offensive line has a lot of room to grow, which is a good thing, I think. Shall we move on to Tyler Linderbaum? Very good game from him. You have him graded as an A, only giving up one pressure, good blocking on pulls, good blocking at level two. He's really become that player that the Ravens drafted him to be.
Tons of mobility. And by the way, this was kind of a little bit of a Yanda game for him. And that's the highest compliment I can give a lineman, by the way. Let's start with that. He was party to two negative plays. On the two negative plays he had, the first one, they got Parsons through. I think Parsons started in level two, started off ball on the play, and he chose the left A gap, I believe. Let me just see. Beaten left by Parsons. That was at Q2 10-17, if you want to look at the play. And then he got backed up by Mazi Smith once, and that's going to happen. Mazi Smith is a first-round draft pick. He's a big physical linebacker or defensive lineman who's going to do that to people from time to time. It's like, you can't just put somebody in front of Michael Pierce or Travis Jones and ask him to block him one-on-one, play after play after play. It's too difficult. but he'd missed eight blocks against the Raiders. That was a really tough game for him. A lot of those were losses at the line of scrimmage. I think it was five in that game. He didn't miss any blocks other than those two pressure events against the Cowboys. So zero missed blocks in a game is nice. Now, obviously, I'm not counting the two pressures. Made five blocks in level two, delivered two pancakes, connected on all four of his pulls. You'd like to see that because he's always the lead guy on a pull. He had two highlights. One is a combination block. The other is a block that should make his grandchildren highlight reel. Now, if you're an offensive lineman in the NFL, I'm going to go on my annual soapbox to tell you, make sure you're collecting the great plays of your career on a disc, because the attention span of your grandkids is going to be every bit as short as yours was at that age. Okay. So you need to show them six clips of great offensive line play that you really want to do. So anyway, that's my point about this. So he had a pull, he pancaked DeMarcus Lawrence, and then he hit Hooker in level two. Okay. So he was pulling. He got a pancake on Lawrence for his first block, and he went down and goes, "Oh, I'll get somebody else." And he gets Malik Hooker in level two. And that's at Q2 1139 out there for you, Tyler Linderbaum, to make sure it is on your grandchild highlight reel. After adjustment in this game, by the way, he was at 94 after adjustment.
Wow, that's a great score. We'll try to get this note out to Tyler that he needs to put that on the disc for the young ones.
Somebody should tweet that. If you do, make sure, tag me if you do. Say, at Tyler Linderbaum or whatever his handle is. I don't know what it is. You know, make sure you put, Q2 1139 on your grandchild highlight reel.
Well, it's great to see that this type of game from him. I almost feel like he's underutilized in the running game in terms of his ability to pull. That's something we saw from him as a college player. It's really where he's at his best because he's so nimble on his feet, so quick out of his stance. So we'll see if they can even weaponize him more as a blocker, because he just has such a ability to get out in space and find players and make these types of highlight reels. So great to see that out of him.
Yep.
So Daniel Falele, I think probably the most talked about, I would say, of the Ravens offensive lineman through the first 3 weeks of the season. A lot of people, I'm sure, want to hear about his game and from your perspective. I think the general consensus was he definitely took a step forward. I'll let you kind of expand on that so you can go through the whole spiel here.
Yeah, really outstanding blocking in space was what characterized this game. And I will get to that in a minute here. But he did have a holding penalty, which reduced his grade. It is just the nature of me weighting these events properly, and you don't get that from every other service, but I'm a modeler by trade. I build a framework for things, and I think I've got good reason to believe that an offensive holding call, which is now a minus five score, that's approximately the correct weighting for it. All right. It has to do with how many hands are out there getting credit for an equal and equivalent, but opposite sign run play. You might have six or seven players that share responsibility for it, but a penalty is really all on that player. So it's naturally that's going to be multiple times what a good block can be, and anyway, it was the only bad thing that really happened to him. He was beaten for a half pressure by Parsons. Not even concerned by that. He was beaten outside by Odigizua for another half quarterback hit. A little more serious. You don't want to get Lamar hit. But in general, what happened was mostly that holding play. He had five missed blocks. Two of those were losses at the line of scrimmage. That's all the background scenery, as far as I'm concerned. If that had been it and he hadn't, had the holding call, his grade would have been a lot higher, but he had 11 blocks in level two. Now let me put that in perspective. He only had three blocks in level two the first 2 weeks combined. Okay. It had been a huge problem that he's walking out into level two and he gets an L2NB on my sheet because he just can't find a block. Combination of factors are involved. One is recognition. Okay, so he's looking around, he's seeing somebody. That's kind of intertwined very closely with his close friend decisiveness, is I'm making a move to get that guy. Okay, and the third thing is he's using his hands a little better in level two. Now, I would not say, it's a very broad statement, a very broad objective for Daniel Falele to use his hands more effectively. He's not at that point yet. He needs to do better in pass protection. He needs to finish blocks better, which includes using your hands, but also just, you know, being willing to punish the guy all the way to the whistle and a little bit to the echo of the whistle. We're not seeing all that yet. We want to see more. But the 11 blocks in level two is such an incredible turnaround from the previous week, and it was so useful in this game that the report after the game I saw from Ryan Mink, who was, I assume, in the clubhouse, was that when they were giving out the game balls, they gave out one to Derrick Henry, and Derrick Henry came off after a speech and jumped into Daniel Faalele's arms. So, you know, I don't know whether it's true or not, but I'll tell you what, it could be true. And just that fact that it could be true is pretty damn cool for Daniel Faalele.
Yeah, I think he obviously needed this game to, you know, continue being a starter for the Ravens. I think if his play from the first 2 weeks that we saw had continued for one, two more games, I think there would have been a change. And maybe there still will be. I mean, it's impossible to say at this point, but he really needed to have this kind of get right game where he's kind of able to, you know, put together all those things that you talked about, ability to identify where the defender is that he needs to block, get to him and actually get block him and put his hands on him and, you know, show some physicality. I think that's one of the things we've all kind of pointed out as like a flaw in his game. He for a person who's massive, he's a huge human being. He doesn't play a physical style of football. Right. He doesn't maul you. He doesn't drive you into the ground. I would love to see, you know, a few more pancakes out of him, because I think it would be one really fun to watch to see somebody hit that big kind of like land on somebody. But also, you know, if he can start doing that, how much that would elevate the offensive line to actually get that type of performance. And maybe there have been flashes of that in practice. Maybe that's why he's still out there, because, you know, the coaches think that upside is available if they can access it. So this hopefully, you know, is a start of something very good. There's, as you mentioned, still things to work on, but I think there's still more we can talk about.
I'll just run through the scoring really quickly. So 58 plays, 51 blocks, 5 missed, half a pressure, half a quarterback hit, an offensive holding. That it was 0.75 per play, which is not that great at guard, but it's a C after adjustment. I think, you know, he had 3 highlight combination blocks also. That, by the way, any number of combination blocks above one is really good, because you got additional missed block risk in a game with heavy runs. It's nice to get some combination blocks. Each of those is giving him an extra 0.01 in terms of his score beyond one. So he got a decent adjustment in this game. A C, I think. It, first of all, nobody should look at that and say, oh, it's only a C. No, it's, first of all, I don't really grade on a curve. So if a C is about a league average player. So he's did very well in this game, I would say, to play at that level. And the Ravens should be very encouraged by it. I think there's a number of things you can look at positively. And Harbaugh said it really accurately in the press conference. And he's not all the way there yet, which is a good thing, because that means there's a lot of room for improvement. And there is. There's a lot of room for improvement still.
And I think that if you're looking at, you know, the glass half full, you see that as, you know, what could be, you know, there is things, if he can clean up, you know, some of the things in pass protection. I think we saw him actually handle a stunt very nicely in this game, something that he's had some issues with. So, you know, we're seeing some potential improvement there in his pass protection. Obviously the ability to make blocks at in the second level and be able to also make blocks at the line of scrimmage, hopefully setting him up for future success. So if he is able to kind of, you know, move to that average or even above average type starter for the Ravens, I think that's a huge win in terms of having that type of player. So that's something that I think obviously everybody is hoping to see.
Yeah, average would be terrific, honestly. Yeah. If he would play at that level, if you told me you would get this game from him for every game for the whole year, you know, a C, even with the holding call, even with the, you know, the pressures that occurred, I'd take it. I'd sign for it in blood right now. But the problem is that there would be a different mix of run and pass that might give him more challenges, and so there's room for improvement, and hey, they should.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium, 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance, but if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Access big savings every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Jennifer Garner. You may know me from my other job, but I'm a business owner too. Here at Once Upon a Farm, we chose the Capital One Venture X business card because it makes everything we do even more rewarding. With no preset spending limit, our purchasing power adapts to meet our business needs. And unlimited double miles on every purchase means we earn more too. And when we travel, we get access to over 1,300 airport lounges. The Capital One Venture X business card. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/VentureXBusiness.
You to seek it.
Yeah, absolutely. The other player, I think he was coming under more scrutiny through the first 2 weeks was Patrick McCurry. We talked about a little bit, you know, the challenges that he faced in terms of the matchups. You know, Chris Jones, obviously one of the best defensive players in the league. He could also say the same thing about Max Crosby. And this week didn't get much easier with Micah Parsons aligning across from him for much of the game. But he had a better game. You know, the we talked about, you know, the number of pressures has been reduced. And then obviously, you know, in a game where they're running the ball as much as they are, you know, to be successful as they were, he had to have, you know, at least a little bit of a solid game in the running game, or in the run blocking as well. So anything that stood out for you with Mekari in terms of this game in particular?
Yeah, there were. He gave up one shared pressure with Justice Hill, actually. It's late in the game. It's Q4 236. It's actually on the play where they completed the pass to Bateman for what was really the key first down of the game. Not the one that completely clinched it, but the one that gave him the first down that was absolutely critical.
It's Zay Flowers' completion.
I'm sorry. It is. It's Zay Flowers. Yeah. You're correct. Yeah. But he also had a pressure that Lamar ran out of. So he loses some adjustment points for that. He had a quarterback hit negated by Vori's illegal use of hands, which is, by the way, very questionable. They could have had 4th and 8, but they just decided that they wanted 3rd and 20 instead. Little bit of questionable call there by the Raiders in terms of that decision. But anyway, that's the way they went with it. And it wiped out a quarterback hit for Mekari that would have cost him some significant points. It would actually cost him 4 points. He did have 10 missed blocks. Now, his 10 missed blocks were less serious. They have 3 losses to the line of scrimmage. And you're going against Micah Parsons. You only lose 3 blocks of the line of scrimmage. I'm not too worried about that. That's okay. But he also didn't convert his opportunities in level 2 tremendously well. He had another issue, I believe, where he slipped once. It was a variety of problems, but it was probably more than anything. It was not being able to find a block in level 2. He did have 5 blocks in level 2. He had a pancake. He connected on 1 of 2 pulls, which is, you know, it's okay, but not really good. What else do I want to say? He did have a highlight block, and this was on the big Henry run, on the Henry touchdown run. He got into level 2, and he turned DeMarvian Overshown like he was a guard. You know, it's basically like he's opening the front gate as a right guard. Literally turned him, maintained that block for a long time in level 2 relative to how long blocks get maintained there, which is still probably about 1.75 seconds. You know, it's not really that long. But anyway, he held Overshown from getting anywhere involved in the play, and Henry, you know, converted it for the touchdown, much to in the way you've been talking about earlier about the Ravens really need good level 2 blocks to extend runs. And it, you know, it's certainly very true. So anyway, even I couldn't give him the full 0.10 adjustment, even though he faced Parsons, because of some of the other things that happened to him. But he did get a pretty big one, 0.07, took his 0.79 for his play up to 0.86, which is a B+ after adjustment. Very happy for Patrick. I think the other question about him is, why did they decide on him? And I think it probably, if I had to guess, it goes back to matchups. And I think that's a decision that, if I had to guess again, I think it's Harbaugh, Monken, and Warhop each get votes in. And it's probably, if I had to guess, 1 vote for Warhop, 2 votes for Monken, and 4 votes for Harbaugh. And you hope it doesn't end up 4-3. We always had that come up on the senior staff, was if there are 10 of us, and you hope that the vote didn't end up 10-9. Because the president's vote was worth 10.
Yeah, I think it is an interesting decision to me that they just kept with Mekari the entire game, because that is the one position they had rotated in the previous two, between Rosengarten and Mekari. And this one, it was just entirely Mekari. Maybe that has to do with the fact that this was a game where they were more run focused, and they think that he's a better run blocker at this point than Rosengarten is in their career. But it's something that I thought was interesting that they kind of moved away from what they had shown in the first 2 weeks. But I think, you know, we need to have this type of game to see what he's capable of doing. Much better in pass protection. I think obviously not as many blocks as we talked about, you know, the sample size isn't huge. But he was against one of the best pass rushers in the entire NFL. And not the entire time. They do switch sides at sometimes, even Parsons around. But just to be able to have at least a, you know, an above average game to slightly good game, I think is good. That's exactly what you need to see. I mean, basically said that for all the players along the offensive line in this one. And I think one of the things that I was expecting this year was that there would be growing pains. You know, it was going to take some time for the team to gel, for the five that's out there to kind of work through some of those issues. And maybe we're starting to see them come together as a unit. And I think that if that's the case, then it's going to greatly benefit them.
I did not expect it. And I'm happy with the result, and I'm not 100% sure that it means this will happen for the rest of the season, because I think they really need to see who Rosengarten is.
Yeah.
Even if McCary is 10% the better option, I don't think they can afford to sit Rosengarten the whole year based on the need to decide about what they need to do organizationally this coming offseason. And that includes moving Rosengarten to left tackle, deciding if they need a left tackle, but they've got to figure out what they have in Roger before the season is over.
Yeah, I think it does put them in a bit of a dilemma, because if you think McCary is at this point a better player, and I don't know if that's the case or not. It seems like they probably do think that, or else, you know, Rosengarten would be starting, but you don't want to risk, you know, this season's outcome by putting in a rookie who may not be ready. So if there is a difference in performance there, it may just kind of be a bit of a redshirt season for Rosengarten, and they'll have to figure it out next year potentially.
Or you know, have the arrogance to believe they can figure it out during practice, which to me is has been something that really hasn't worked out. Of course, the sixth man who got the invisible man who got his first snap of the season is Ben Cleveland, came in as a sixth lineman on the Henry touchdown run from 1 yard, made his block. What he's done in the season doesn't seem to be carrying weight in terms of his ability to get on the field. So, you know, they have their methods. They certainly believe in them. And it's very hard to disagree with the Ravens, who've been so successful developing linemen from UDFA and mid to low round draft picks.
Yeah, I think we'll have to see if that continues, you know, if they're able to do that with a different coaching staff, especially at the offensive line coach. It's how much of that development is part of that process, and can they identify someone who can step up into that role and take, you know, multiple players who need time to develop and need time in a system. Do they have that system in place, and can they continue to take players in their second and third seasons and have them brought into, you know, starting caliber players who, when they entered the league, certainly were not that. So it'll be something that's going to be interesting to track over the next couple of years.
All right. Well, let's spend some time talking about some skill position players here. We also got some mailbag questions, but we have talked about some of the players, but who would you like to talk about among the skill guys that we haven't really given enough run to yet?
I'm going to start with Derrick Henry, just because I feel like he had a massive impact in this game, and we really haven't talked about him too much. You know, we talked a little bit about how it's kind of hot and cold with him to a certain extent. You know, you have some of these huge plays, explosive plays, when he's out in kind of open field or kind of like semi-open field, his ability to just kind of open up and put defenders behind him. We saw the wicked stiff arms out of him in a couple of plays in this game. Ability to break tackles. I think, was it 12 forced missed tackles in this game I saw?
I thought it was seven or something.
It might have been seven.
It's still an impressive total, by the way.
It was a lot. He was running through the defense like a hot knife through butter, to use a overused analogy there. But you know, he was a big reason why the Ravens were able to win this game. That kind of threat on the field in combination with Lamar Jackson really kind of elevates this offense, especially when you're able to kind of get into those types of good, you know, schematic and functional advantages that we talked about a little bit in terms of, you know, personnel and formation. I thought they finally unlocked the potential of Henry through a various number of mechanisms. And I'm excited to see what that will look like, you know, through the next 14 games of the season. Will they continue to be able to tap into that? Or is it going to be more of the, you know, we're going to go into jumbo and heavy packages and try to slam into a wall where we're not necessarily getting a lot of great blocks up front without trying to use some sort of, you know, deception and misdirection and formational advantages. So I think they need to use him smartly. They can't just say, we're going to put Derrick Henry and get 5 yards every time he touches the ball. it's not that simple.
It is not. They really have to get him holes. And I think the fact that he's, you know, jumping into the arms of Daniel Faalele, whether true or not, again, is an indication that you know, he really values that. Derrick Henry last year, first contact was an average of half a yard past the line of scrimmage with Tennessee. That is not going to get it done. The average Ravens running back was something like 1.5 yards. It was approximately 1 yard further down the field. Derrick Henry last night, average point of first contact, 2 yards down the field. And he also generated 4 yards of average yards after contact per play, per carry. So that was 100 of his yards were yards after contact, yeah, by the way, in this game. Terrific game in that sense, but it's also a terrific game for the offensive line and for Patrick Ricard, getting him those initial opportunity for contact occurring with a level 2 defender. Whenever you can do that, that's a big win for Derrick Henry.
Yeah, when he's open and free in level 2, it's going to be a first down pretty much every single time at minimum. And we can see the ability to take it through the house as well. And then, you know, he's been very effective as a goal line back too. We'll give him credit, yep, there. He definitely gives them a different kind of element when you're 1 yard, 2 yards out. Whether it's the direct snap, which we saw, or, you know, a standard formation, he's been able to get it done when they needed him to.
Yeah, it's interesting. In the game, they got the ball first and goal at the 2. And I believe he squeezed in 2 successes on the runs because he got the first run, got him 1 yard, which is over 45% of the yardage required. So it counts as a success on that play. And then he got the last yard, which when you score a touchdown, it's always a success on the play. So he had very high percentages of successes in this game. And, you know, a few of the ones that didn't work out happened to be magnified and late. One of the slips that occurred that set up the 3rd and 3 play, I believe. Mm-hmm. So it's not like there were none that didn't work out. But by and large, Derrick Henry was tremendously successful in this game and had 8 first downs on 25 carries, which is terrific. And he, of course, had the 2 touchdowns. So exciting game. I'll bring up a player. How about we talk about Nelson Agholor? Kind of been a forgotten man in terms of targets for the year. And he had a few, but he hasn't really had much in the way of receptions. Caught a ball, not only caught a ball, not exactly a contested play, but he caught a ball and then he made somebody miss. And that making somebody miss, a personal effort, and he turns it into about another 45 yards after the catch. Just very impressive play. He's a very different person than I thought he would be, given what I've seen at training camp. He's, first of all, last year, the whole peel the safety off thing, it's a really special, non-selfish play for him to recognize it, talk about it in the huddle, get Lamar to do it. All of those things, just very unique among wide receivers who pretty much always want the football personally. And the other thing is he's really reduced a lot of the things that were hurting his game on the margin when he was at New England. A lot of drops, not being real great on contested catches and things like that.
Yeah, I think he's changed his game, or at least his role has morphed as he's played with the Ravens. He's been more of an intermediate pass catcher. And I think, you know, in years past, he's been been used primarily as a deep threat on a lot of teams. Obviously he still has the speed. He has the ability to stretch defenses. If the Ravens wanted to use him that way, they have targeted him downfield a couple of times. But it hasn't really been, you know, his primary use case. But you know, I think on that play where he was able to make the person miss, he clocked, like, was it 20.5 or 20.6 miles per hour, one of the fastest top 10, I think, in the league this year for a ball carrier. You know, that's impressive to see, you know, him still have that ability to kind of open it up and pick up, you know, chunks of yards. It's just a matter of the Ravens, you know, not passing the ball that much so far. I think if they needed to kind of open it up and have a game plan where they were going more 3 wide and targeting wide receivers down the field, he would be a bigger part of that. And I feel confident in his ability to be the wide receiver 3 for the Ravens if they needed to have that type of offensive situation.
When I look at the Ravens receivers, there really isn't anyone who's had a disappointing year, with the exception of Flowers, who, yeah, I don't think it's a matter of anything but usage. that's getting in there. And I'm talking about the back. I'm talking about any eligible receiver when I look at this. I want to go through some of these yards per target numbers, but Zay Flowers is slightly under six right now, a completely unacceptable, but it's a matter of trying to use him on too many short routes and not using him down the field. And that's probably a matter of having a better gadget option to go with him. But Isaiah Likely is at almost 9 yards per target. So no problem with that, even though he's higher last year, I believe, or very close. Hill is at almost 7 yards per target. That's fine for a running back. Bateman is over 9 yards per target, which is fine. You know, more targets would be great, but that's he's doing okay. Andrews is over 8 yards a target, which if you'd have told me we were getting that, that'd be great. The problem is he's only had 8 targets in 3 games. Aguilar is at 15 yards per target, most of which was driven by that one play, but he's had 5 targets on the year. Kolar at 17 yards per target, again, a 30-yard play in this game. Derrick Henry is at 8.75 yards per target. Again, I'd sign for that in blood. Only Patrick Ricard with 1 target for 0 yards really doesn't look that good. But, you know, I obviously we know it's been a high-efficiency, low-volume passing attack so far for the Ravens, but got to be really excited about what we've seen basically from everybody except for the usage of Zay Flowers.
Yeah, I find it a little bit frustrating because I felt like, especially in the second half of the year, 2023, the Ravens kind of tapped into his potential as more of a downfield threat. He, I think, is an above average route runner. I think he can separate well. And we've seen maybe one or two plays where he's kind of been hit on like a kind of intermediate or deep out type play, timing throw from Lamar. They run that route for him and they run that route for Bateman. And I think it's been effective for both of them. I just like to see more downfield passing. We talked a little bit about that. I think in the first, you know, session that we had, and in this game, they really probably didn't need to, but I still think it's kind of the next step in this offense to kind of really threaten all levels of the defense. They have the personnel to do it. It just needs to be something where they get in that rhythm. And if they do that, I think everything they did successfully in this game, I think just adds another layer to that, to be able to show that you can run the ball down their throat, use the same personnel and then pass it.
Pass deep too, yeah.
Pass deep, pass intermediate, hit them over the middle, hit them on those kind of play action passes. There are so many options that are available. Just being able to sequence them properly, keep the defense off balance, get into that kind of easy offense where everything just kind of flows. That's where they need to get to. And I think they're building to that. And we're seeing progress in a lot of different ways with putting it all together. It's not going to happen immediately. And we're still very early in the season, but hopefully by midseason, we really see that offense humming in that direction.
Yeah. I think Flowers, first of all, has tremendous trust with Lamar, but since Lamar is a like to see the route after the break quarterback, which is a really important distinction because he doesn't really work well with Bateman because Bateman needs a timing throw. But Flowers, he's got time to see the route because his separation really shows up in spades with speed after the break. Also, most opponents play zone defense against the Ravens. The heavy predominance of plays are going to be zone against the Ravens, which means there is space to be found. And Flowers is a sudden athlete who can immediately break to that space, allow Lamar to see it, and be open between level 2 and level 3. And I really believe that's the most valuable place that you can get it. Back in some deep crossers, back in some plays that even take a little bit longer to develop where other quarterbacks won't be as comfortable holding the ball long enough for it to happen. But Lamar is perfectly comfortable extending plays in that way. He gets to see the route just the way he likes it, make an up and down throw as he needs to between 2 and 3, or even a laser sometimes. And Flowers is a great guy to potentially give you yak on those plays as well. I just think he's really being underutilized to be used close to the line of scrimmage. The solution, I think, there are two potential solutions. One is a guy who hasn't gotten on the field hardly at all. 5 snaps so far this year out of Deontay Hardy. I really thought he'd be part of the offense, just has not worked out so far. The second one is Keaton Mitchell when he returns. And he should really take a lot of the pressure off of Flowers because they need to find the way to get the ball into Mitchell's hands in space to make him valuable, which means necessarily you're going to want to get Flowers out of that space. So I think that you know the short options are basically going to be Mitchell's domain once he's back and if he's playing at a significant percentage of where it was last year.
I would go so far as to say, I won't say completely, but almost entirely remove the around the line of scrimmage throws. Unless you're really just trying to kind of get a few completions going to get some, you know, offense moving, they're oftentimes wasted plays. They require perfect execution and blocking in order for you to even get, you know, 5 to 8 yards. Very rarely are you going to turn those into big plays. I think it's extremely rare for the Ravens to actually turn those types of plays into like an actual explosive. I just don't see the benefit of having them aside from, you know, trying to stretch a defense horizontally, but you can do that with running plays. You can do that with the jet motion. You can do that even with a kind of a jet motion with a kind of like a pop pass. If you want to make an actual passing play, there's other ways to kind of get that same result without the lower percentage of the quick throws to the perimeter.
So first of all, completely agree with that. And some of that, the jet motion, I don't even really have a problem with Flowers being the guy, other than there's other people who can do it and Flowers can still take another defender out of the play going downfield. But jet, any kind of jet motion is a major bread and butter staple to what the Ravens are doing with misdirection in the run game. So they do want to keep that. It's just somebody else should be doing it. And they've got other players who can. And I know they're making some sort of a sacrifice, usually in terms of blocking ability to do that. By the way, that is one thing I've really liked from Zay Flowers' game is how he's looked down the field as a blocker so far this year.
I agree. Yeah, I've noticed that. He's been very feisty in getting after defenders. He's helped to extend a number of these long plays. So that's very good to see.
But anyway, I kind of went on that diatribe. I don't even remember who I started with. Maybe it was Aguilar. But who would you like? Anybody else you want to talk about?
We have a mailbag we can go to do. Yeah, real quick, I'll just mention Rashad Bateman again. We talked about him a little bit. I think, you know, I don't think he's ever going to be a featured part of this offense, but he's someone who's getting seemingly, you know, 3 to 5 targets a game. And I think he's been pretty effective in the targets that he's receiving. You mentioned the yards per target number before. Obviously he had a touchdown, got wide open in a zone defense that the Cowboys are playing. He got open, I think, was it the play right before it, you know, for a shorter gain. He has that ability, I think, to kind of find those spaces in zone defenses. He's, I think, good at creating separation. Not as quick out of his breaks necessarily as Zay Flowers, but he is, I think, a good route runner. And I just like to see him. I don't know. You don't have to feature him, but I think you just need to get him as like a primary read on more passes, because I think he is someone in the structure of a passing play who can be someone who will get open when needed, especially if he's in kind of like a one-on-one cover situation. I think he's going to be winning more than he's losing in those situations.
I want to see 4 times per game where Jackson throws a pass on a timed basis. And it could easily be that 2.5 of those on average are going to Bateman, because he's going to be the best separator in terms of quick time throws. I mean, there's other times. I'm not talking about hot reads. I'm talking about timed reads that come off the snap, where you've got a selection of routes you're dealing with, and Lamar actively decides not to extend the play by throwing a ball before the receiver breaks. Unfortunately, the interception Bateman allowed, effectively, it's the only interception of the year, kind of breaks down on that trust some, because you're throwing a ball necessarily where there might be contested coverage. Bateman has just got to prove that he's not going to be a guy who allows the ball to get through his hands and get up in the air, which has been an unfortunate part of his game. On pace for 653 yards for right now for the year. I wouldn't take the over or the under on that. I don't think I'd bet it either way, but because there's a risk of injury as well. But I will say this, Lamar Jackson, his passing yards, if you have the under, I think you're going to win that bet for the year. I think the Ravens are going to be not a team. I don't think Lamar Jackson is passing for 4,000 yards, or not for 4,200 anyway. And I think the number might have been higher than that, the over under. But I think if you have the under right now, you're probably in a good position based on what we saw against Dallas. I think this team's identity is more going to be trying to out physical, run teams down, wear them down, use Derrick Henry, use the Lamar Henry mesh point, than it will be trying to make extensive use of their passing weapons.
Yeah, it's an interesting place for them to be in, because they are leading the league in offense total yards at this point through three games. They're averaging over 200 yards a game on the ground, and I think about 230 through the air. So, yeah, that would put Lamar under 4,000 for sure. I tend to agree with you that if they're able to keep this level of success, and by this level, I don't necessarily mean what they were able to do against Dallas. I don't think they'll be able to do that every game. But if they can average 200 yards per game on the ground, they don't need to pass the ball, you know, 30 plus times.
That was exactly the formula for the 2019 Ravens, by the way. They got 200 of each, basically, and for the year. And it was the greatest rushing performance ever. And it was they were one of only two teams in history, I think, to do 200 in both.
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy to keep that type of average up. And we'll see, you know, as teams try to take away different things, what they do. Hopefully it's going to be a pick your poison as an opposing defense. And then the Ravens can, you know, adjust appropriately.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to the mailbag. I think we got a question or two there that I want to get to, and I should have been prepared with this and had it up, but it always takes me a second. Okay, here we go. Will says, and he's at L3TYL35. No idea what that means, but if you want to contact him, you can ask him. If Ronnie Stanley continues to play at this level for 15 to 17 games and avoids major injury, what percentage chance would you give him of being a Raven in 2025?
Yeah, we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but we didn't talk about percentage chance. Yeah. I would say higher than 50%. I would lean probably closer to 65%.
Okay, I would take the under on that. I'd say it's more like 30, because I think he's playing at a high enough level right now that people would see the value in it. He won't necessarily get a huge contract, which anytime the contract is a little bit less huge, it increases the chance that the Ravens might get him. But I think that if he plays this well for the rest of the season, and it's 15 to 17 games, obviously he's basically healthy. He'll have answered the major question about what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Let's even have another one here. Here's a good one. So somebody was talking about this afternoon. I didn't think I could really give an answer on this. He's talking about Daniel Fa'alele, and it's, you shouldn't even be on live RN. We got a something. Okay. 589140 particular looks like. Appreciate the question anyway. Is this real improvement for Daniel Fa'alele or just skewed by playing a terrible Cowboys front?
That's a little bit tougher, just because, once again, small sample size for Fa'alele. And obviously the Cowboys don't have the best defensive line or ability to run defend. I think it's probably a little bit of both, but I'm hoping it can kind of be like a jumping off point where Fa'alele gains some confidence and gains some, you know, trust in himself, his ability to kind of play better in some of these areas that we discussed. So I don't want to say it's all one or the other. I would lean probably a little bit more to the Cowboys just being really bad than finally all of a sudden figuring things out. But he did seem to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of his ability to be decisive and finding, you know, players to block and making those blocks. So I think it's something that can definitely be built on. And it definitely came at the right time because they needed to have this.
Completely agree. And I would say the blocking in space is what I would point to as that seems to be a Fa'alele improvement. And I can't figure out a way, processing this myself, to map that into the Cowboys being bad. The Cowboys are very quick in level two. I mean, you know, DeMarvian Overshown and others are quick linebackers. Micah Parsons, when he's off ball, you certainly have Micah Parsons on the front, who's a quick guy. And I think the fact that he's getting into level two and is finding blocks to make against a team like the Cowboys is actually pretty good. So I would agree with you. Jumping off point, still tons of improvement left. There are elements of this that Daniel Fa'alele, you know, isn't the lineman yet that the Ravens want him to be. But then, you know, it was a C game. He had a penalty. I mean, I'm not, I don't praise it as much as some other people are doing. Derrick Henry jumping into his arms is probably appropriate because they won this game and they really needed the win. Derrick Henry jumping into his arms next week, if he performs the same, would be largely inappropriate, in my opinion. Although, you know, it might mean they beat the Buffalo Bills, which would be, jump into his arms as many times as you need to if you get wins like that.
I agree with that for sure.
All right. Let's see if we got one more question here we can go to. Brad McGowan. Okay. Let's look at this one. He's really asking about Rosengarten. He says, hey, Ken, at this point, the Ravens seem to be genuinely believe that Falele gives him a better chance at right guard, and they are going to ride him to the end. But any idea why they would do the same with McCary at right tackle? Roger Rosengarten has looked better, in my opinion.
I mean, it's I do think that in this case, it's probably the running aspect of this specific matchup. And I think there's more faith in McCary being someone that they can run behind. And even though McCary isn't necessarily the best run blocker, I think there's a little bit more trust in him and his ability to execute there. I still think it's early, and I think, you know, we had a little bit of a conversation about, to me at least, it was surprising that there wasn't more of that rotation that we had seen previously, and why they chose to just stick strictly to McCary. I don't know if that's something that is foretelling, you know, what they are planning on doing in the future, or if it's just, you know, a specific matchup type situation. But I tend to think that Rosengarten hasn't been amazing through, you know, in the time that he was out there. He's had some good things. He's also had some very bad plays. Very small sample size with him. I think total snaps is probably what, like
about 60.
70. Yeah. So like it's it's been split between two games. So it's really hard to get a great picture of what he's been able to do.
You're right. It's less. It's 36 actually, I think, but he didn't have a great either game. It was like 19 and 17 in two blocks, but yeah, I didn't want to say.
Yeah. So it's, it was kind of like, you know, McCary would play like two drives and he would play one or something like that. So I think that they want to see what he can do. But I think they just have more trust in what McCary is able to do at this point.
Yeah. I'll maybe add one other factor. I think 60% of their game plan was how to neutralize Micah Parsons, who's by far their best defensive player. All of the rest of the 10 guys on the field put together don't add up to very much. And I'm, you know, maybe being unfair to DeMarcus Lawrence in that. I don't think I'm being unfair to anybody else. So it's a group that is just not an imposing defensive team at all, unless you get outstanding performance from Micah Parsons. So part of what they're doing is trying to avoid errors on what they knew would be a set of very quick passes with Micah Parsons in the game. They're going to get rid of the ball quickly. 3.2 ADOT really goes to that level. A lot of runs right at Parsons. Don't have a really strong feeling that McCary is a better, but McCary and Rosengarten are both kind of finesse players. I don't really have a strong feeling that McCary is more overpowering in terms of doing that, but they have other people to overpower Micah Parsons, like Ricard, like a pulling guard. There's other players who can do that. I think that basically they said, let's avoid errors for this game. McCary's dealt with these two matchups already. It's not like he'd been great, but he hadn't been fall off the table terrible, as we've seen from some other right tackles who've gone up against JJ Watt or TJ Watt or others in the past. So I look at this and I say, just looking back, that's probably what their thought process was. And I still think Rosengarten has to get out there this year and soon. All right, we'll call it there, I think, for the evening on the mailbag. And sorry we didn't get some questions here, folks, but great stuff. Gabe, always appreciate you coming on. Can you tell people where they can talk football with you online?
Yeah, the best place to find me is just on Twitter. I'm pretty active, especially during the games. I like to kind of live tweet what I'm seeing, and, you know, just like to interact with people who are willing to, you know, talk about what they're seeing as well. So you can find me at Gabe Fergie, and love to, if you want to give me a follow. I tend to, you know, like to follow people back and just see what your thoughts are as well, and have a conversation. So look forward to, you know, meeting up with anybody out there, and especially Orioles, like to talk about them as well. We just got into the playoffs today. So we'll see what happens. It's been a frustrating season from that end, but, you know, once you're in the dance, you know, you have a chance. So happy to see that finally got put into the definitive area where it was kind of like on the cusp for quite a while.
They've had five players come back in the last week and a half from injury, which is finally a little bit of good news. But Ryan Mountcastle back today, got his first hit. Arias, who was back a couple days ago, got a home run today. That was big. And Westberg had a single and a walk. So they're all called out of producing. And what really encourages me about the Orioles lineup right now is that it looks like a pennant winning lineup again on paper. It's not filled with basically players picked up from the Chicago White Sox at the trade deadline, it's been very frustrating the last few weeks. So anyway, Gabe, you know how much I appreciate having you on the show and having a great football conversation like this. The time always rolls by. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. Thanks for being so loyal to the show. We really appreciate that. If you want to talk on a film study short, hit me up. Always am open to ideas for shows. We'll have an opportunity on the bye week to do some of these. We also have an opportunity at some point sooner than that. I've got time towards the end of each week to have such a discussion, for example. DMs are always open. Hit me up. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.